The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Good afternoon. This is Steve Maskin, streaming live to you on www.focusonfemales.com. We are brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit corporation which brings you the annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. Our next symposium is March 21st, 2009. It is at the Tampa Convention Center, and it is free to all. We had over 1,150 women attend our third annual healthcare symposium this past March 2008. Together, these educational programs are designed to make you a lay expert on your medical problems, to enable you to better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and reduced economic burden of avoidable medical care. Now, this week's dry eye tip. Dry eye can cause redness and inflammation, irritation through many different mechanisms. One of which is often not recognized, is a chronic mild bacterial infection or bacterial conjunctivitis. If you're having problems eradicating your redness and inflammation, and if you are a dry eye patient, bring it up, raise it as a possibility to your physician to evaluate you for possible a chronic mild non-aggressive type of bacterial conjunctivitis. If you have it, if it's identified and treated, you will find improvement. Keep that in mind. And now to this week's healthcare clinic topic, which is hypertension. I have the honor and good fortune to have with me in the studios a cardiologist, a long-time cardiologist, a well-recognized name here and around the world, Benedict Maniscalco. Benny has been in the private practice of medicine, specializing in cardiovascular diseases since 1976. He serves as the chairman and CEO of Heartbeat International, a philanthropic organization providing permanent pacemakers and other cardiac devices to the indigent population of the world. Heartbeat International currently operates in 28 countries and 46 cities internationally. Dr. Maniscalco continues his practice of preventative and consultative cardiology, in addition to serving as medical advisor to multiple companies involved in medically related business. He's regarded as an opinion leader, innovator, and educator in cardiovascular medicine. He has served the American College of Cardiology at the local, state, and national level in leadership roles which have directly influenced healthcare policy. Dr. Maniscalco is a graduate of Duke University School of Medicine and obtained his postgraduate training in internal medicine and cardiovascular diseases at Emory University-affiliated hospitals. After leaving a faculty position at the University of South Florida School of Medicine, he founded the St. Joseph's Heart Institution in Tampa, Florida. He is a member of the American Medical Association, American Heart Association, and a fellow of the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, American College of Physicians, American College of Chest Physicians, and the Society for Cardiac Angioplasty. Benny, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
And our topic today is hypertension. Let's start off with some basics. Benny, what is the hypertension? Let's start there.
Well, hypertension is a problem that is very perverse in our society and around the world. Hypertension is when we have a pulsatile blood flow against an artery wall that is resistant. And thus we know that as that resistance grows, the number of complications that can occur in the blood vessel system of our bodies increases dramatically. In fact, hypertension is a condition which is a multiplier of all vascular diseases in our body.
Let me ask you, Benny, why is it necessary to even have a blood pressure? Let's start there.
Well, our body runs off of a very precious fuel, and that fuel is oxygen. So if we're going to deliver oxygen, which is absorbed in our blood cells, we need to have a way to transport it around to our body and to the vital tissues of our body. So the heart, which is a big muscle that pumps blood, takes the blood that has been freshly provided with oxygen and pumps it out into the artery side of the body and then delivers it through a decreasing size of blood vessels till they break down to very tiny little capillaries into our organs and provide the fresh oxygen to our tissues so that those organs can operate normally.
Is that what creates a blood pressure, the fact that the heart is pumping blood against progressively narrower sized vessels?
Not exactly. Blood pressure is the result of the pressure flow generated by the heart as a pump. The muscle of the heart fills with blood, and electrically timed, just like in our car, we get a electrical combination with a contractile or squeezing motion of the heart, and the blood is propelled out of the heart into the artery. It is the change in the pressure of that artery as the pulsatile flow occurs that is truly the pressure. As it goes out of the heart, we call it the systolic pressure because the artery is expanding. And when the artery relaxes in between the initial pulsation of flow and the second pulsation, we call that diastolic pressure. So blood pressure is the difference between blood flow generated with a pumping motion and a relaxation motion.
Okay. And, of course, blood pressure is considered one of the vital signs. Would you explain what vital signs are and what other vital signs we have?
Well, vital signs are those very gross measurements of whether or not we have normal function in various components of our body. For instance, we often take the temperature of our body, knowing that most human beings have a core body temperature in a certain range. And we define that range as being the normal temperature. When we go too far astray, either up or down from that temperature, then our normal body functions change. Likewise, with high blood pressure, if you have a blood pressure that goes too low, we can't deliver blood and oxygen effectively. If it goes too high, we can cause destructive changes to occur in our blood vessel system.
Okay. And other vital signs would include?
Your respiration and your pulse and the rate of your pulse. So those are the core vital signs that we use, your temperature, your blood pressure, your pulse, and your respiratory rate.
Very good. Okay, so what causes hypertension?
At the end of the day, the exact cause of hypertension in each person is not known. It's a complex series of states that occur in various of our folks. Some people have hypertension because they have anatomic developmental problems. For instance, some people might have a banding or a narrowing in their aorta, which is called a coarctation. And so we distinguish right out the gate from those things that are developmentally or congenitally determined that give us high blood pressure. And then we have that other very, very large category, the largest category of essential hypertension, in which we don't have a specific pathology at the beginning that we can identify. So things that are treatable, like coarctation or brain tumor or a tumor of the adrenal gland, can be treated, excised surgically, and blood pressure returns to normal. But the vast, vast majority of patients who have high blood pressure are patients who have genetic predisposition to abnormal function of their blood vessels, patients who have abnormal genetic hormonal differences, patients who are more sensitive to salt and water, and a host of other things, patients who are more susceptible to having atherosclerosis, the hardening of the arteries that we talk to our patients about. So there are a multitude of complex factors that in the end lead to elevation of the blood pressure.
Okay, and we may come back to some of those, but right now let's go to Brandon, where Susan's on the line with a question about hypertension. Susan, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with Steve Maskin and our guest today, Benny Maniscalco. Do you have a question on hypertension?
Yes, thank you very much. I think the doctor mentioned just a moment ago about something. He said about the sodium. I have a girlfriend who has been diagnosed with hypertension, but the only thing that they prescribed her was a diuretic, and I was just assuming that that was strange. If you've been diagnosed with hypertension, why would they just give you a diuretic? But I'm assuming because of the sodium.
Benny?
Yes. For many, many years, diuretics had been the leading pharmacologic agent or drug that we would start our patients on to control blood pressure. It was well recognized that patients who had high blood pressure could respond very nicely to the use of diuretics because they promote the kidney eliminating excessive loads of sodium. So if in today's world where you have so many preservatives and you have so many different kinds of foods that are so high in sodium, many patients will respond very nicely to diuretic therapy by eliminating excess sodium.
Oh, thank you very much. That answers the question for me.
Susan, do you have a follow-up question?
No, that will be it right for today. Thank you
thank
very
you
much.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and at this point in time, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We'll be back in a flash.
Thanks for listening.
Pacemaker Monitoring Center in St. Petersburg reminds fellow Americans that tough economic times come and go. And if you're feeling the pinch, many common sense steps can be taken to lower your expenses and ease the hurt. Save money on gasoline by combining errands. Make certain your tires are properly inflated and remove unnecessary excess weight from your vehicle. In the home, turn off lights and unplug appliances not in use. Close closet and shower doors and bathroom heating and cooling vents so you're not paying to heat or cool unused areas of your home. Most importantly, Pacemaker Monitoring Center says help others. Support the local businesses in your community. They employ your friends, family, and neighbors. Buy local and buy American-made products. This total broadcasting message is from Pacemaker Monitoring Center in St. Petersburg. For information on their life-saving service, visit their website at www.pacercheck.com. That's www.pacercheck.com for Pacemaker Monitoring Center in St. Petersburg.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679. 2702.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling hypertension today with my guest, Benny Maniscalco. It's nice of you listeners out there to tune in and listen to the show, but it's even better to call in. Everyone knows somebody with hypertension. Please feel free to go ahead and call in and ask your question. They're only good questions. Furthermore, I just want to make one quick comment on the if you go to our website, you can click the Contact Us button, and you can make comments, ask questions, as well as suggestions for future topics, something that medical disease or disorder that perhaps affects you personally or your family member. And we'd be happy to go ahead and schedule a show and a guest expert focusing exclusively on your problems, medical problems. Now, let's return to hypertension. And Benny was talking about the different causes of hypertension, and it varies from less common causes such as developmental or increased hormonal or blood vessel diseases, atherosclerosis, to essential hypertension. Benny, what is a normal blood pressure?
Normal blood pressure is 120 over 80. And this is a number that we really learned many, many, many years ago when we were in medical school, and somehow we got away from it. If you look at a very landmark study called the Framingham study, a blood pressure of 115 over 75 is at the time associated with a group of 40-year-old men. And if you had all of the things normal by the consideration at the time, there was a 2% incidence of a vascular event of either stroke or heart attack. So when you start taking your blood pressure from numbers of 115 over 75 and increasing the top number, which is called a systolic pressure, by 20 millimeters of mercury, that's the unit we measure blood pressure in, millimeters of mercury, or the bottom number by 10 millimeters of mercury, you double that event rate. So the normal blood pressure is 120 over 80 or less, and that would put you on a statistically risk basis as low as anyone who did not have high blood pressure. So treatment requires that you get to 120 over 80 or less.
And I remember from my training, of course, in medical school, I was graduated back in 84, but they would say that if your diastolic is 90 or above, you require therapy. But I recently heard that actually they've modified that, and that they recommend treatment, or you recommend treatment with diastolic at 85.
Yes, I think as we have become more and more knowledgeable with the results of very, very large studies, clinical studies where we've enrolled thousands upon thousands of patients, we're aware of the fact that a diastolic pressure of 90, which is 15 millimeters of mercury greater than the 115 over 75 that I mentioned just a minute ago, is associated with a doubling of your risk. So we now know that the initial advice we were giving our colleagues across the country and our patients is really one that has to be much more aggressively revised. We need to insist, if we can, that we get our patients to a blood pressure of 120 over 80 or less.
Very good. And what you mentioned, stroke and heart attack, are those the most common health problems associated with hypertension?
Well, there are a number of problems associated with hypertension, but clearly the ones that we hear about and read about and have the most devastating effect, as well as economic effect, is the fact that we might have a heart attack or we might have a stroke. The literal play that hypertension has in those two instances is that they double and quadruple the rate of possibility of having that heart attack when the blood pressure is elevated. And as I said, if you started with a blood pressure, Steve, for instance, of 140 over 90, and you dropped the pressure, you would then experience, for every 2 millimeters of mercury that you drop the pressure, systolic and diastolic, a 6% reduction in heart attacks and an 18% reduction in strokes. So if you think about it, as we mentioned a minute ago, if you raise the pressure by 20 over 10, you double. If you drop by as little as 2 millimeters of mercury, you can have an enormous effect on reducing the devastation of heart attacks and strokes.
Well, this is very, obviously very important information that everyone needs to digest and understand. Tell me, when hypertension is treated, we're talking about reducing hypertension. Is it important to lower that blood pressure gradually?
Well, there was an old axiom as I went through medical school and then my residency that we should do it easily because we wanted not to cause a dramatic change in blood pressure. But we've now learned that that was erroneous thinking. Much as we thought we were correct, we are grossly incorrect if we think we need to take our time in lowering blood pressure. In fact, time is events. So by that I mean the longer you take to get the pressure to normal, the greater the risk period for a patient to have a heart attack or stroke. So the answer is no. We'd like to get your blood pressure down as quickly as possible without causing any untoward effects to the patients. And that, of course, is dependent on a whole host of factors. But in general, the answer is we want it down, and we want it down quickly.
Okay. Now, when should a person, let's say we have a 55-year-old individual who is otherwise healthy, hasn't seen a doctor maybe in 6 months or so, what are early symptoms that should trigger in that individual's mind that perhaps they should have their blood pressure checked, perhaps they have the beginnings of essential hypertension?
Well, I think that's one of the great problems that we face in this country. In national surveys that have been done in our country, we know that we do the best job of letting the people know what normal is, and we do the best job of trying to reach people to treat them. But at the end of the day, we only have about 25% to 30% of the population at the goal of therapy. So blood pressure elevations are generally silent, and it's not until something happens that the vast majority of patients present to their physician or to the health clinic. And those presentations are often very devastating events, such as a stroke or a heart attack or heart failure when the heart muscle can't pump blood effectively against that high pressure any longer, or kidney failure.
Okay, well, we're going to come right back, and when we do, we'll continue on discussing hypertension and how to pick up early hypertension. This is Steve Maskin on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Your choice for intelligent talk. Bennett, Gallagher, Prager, Medved, Hewitt. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. Asian and Pacific nations wrapping up a summit in Peru say they're, quote, convinced the current economic crisis can be overcome by the summer of 2010. They say they've already taken extraordinary steps to stabilize the financial sector and boost economic growth. Top aides to President-elect Barack Obama say he wants a tax cut and spending package probably bigger than the $175 billion he talked about on the campaign trail. Obama's outlined a plan aimed at creating 2.5 million jobs in 2 years. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson is being tapped to be the next Commerce Secretary. A Democratic official says the nomination will be announced sometime after Thanksgiving. Richardson served previously as Energy Secretary and U.N. Ambassador. And shots have reportedly been fired at a motorcade carrying the presidents of Georgia and Poland. The Speaker of the Georgian Parliament says the gunfire came from South Ossetia. More details at SRNnews.com.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Here's your exclusive AccuWeather forecast.
With a good deal of sunshine this afternoon, a nice-looking Sunday. This afternoon's high 74. Tonight, partly cloudy, a little on the cool side. Low 55. A mix of sun and clouds tomorrow. A nice start to the work week. High 76. It'll be partly sunny Tuesday. A brief shower. High 73. That's your AccuWeather forecast. I'm meteorologist Eric Wilhelm.
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin, and we're discussing hypertension today with my guest, Benny Maniscalco. Benny, before the break, we were talking about symptoms in a middle-aged individual which may trigger the concern about blood pressure. What is your recommendation as far as when people should routinely check their blood pressure and how often?
Well, I think someone who has never had hypertension should, in fact, in their early adult years, have a screening procedure done, a blood pressure recorded, and certainly after age 40, I recommend that the patient be seen at least once a year by their primary care physician, and that once hypertension is diagnosed, they need to be seen frequently to assure that the therapy that has brought them to normal remains effective And so I think at least once a year, and after age 50, I would recommend at least twice a year that the blood pressure be measured and that the patient be evaluated for the presence of hypertension.
And that is in the patient who has no hypertension, correct?
No hypertension or symptoms. And I think that, as I said, it's such a silent disease that the vast majority of patients either present with event or are discovered on a routine basis when they visit a healthcare professional.
What are some of the, and I think it's an excellent point, the fact that hypertension is a silent disease and may actually first emerge or become recognized with a life-altering event like a heart attack or a stroke. Are there subtle symptoms that you would suggest people pay attention to that would trigger them checking their blood pressure? Symptoms that are subtle, I say, meaning that nothing serious as a heart attack, but nevertheless suggesting that they really should have that blood pressure checked.
I think there are. I think, first of all, if they have a family history of hypertension, that's not so subtle in terms of a symptom, but it's a piece of historical data. So certainly they should inquire from their family members whether or not it's in the family. Number two, I think anyone who's experiencing increasing fatigability, mild headaches, a sense of energy decrease, a sense that things that heretofore were easily done are now a chore. That may be a sign, along with things like difficulty breathing and high blood pressure measurements, also in the pulmonary artery, because of the heart muscle not working effectively. So chest discomfort, breathing difficulties, fatigability, easy breathlessness, a genetic history or family history, I think, are important enough that the patient should see the doctor.
Excellent. Are you suggesting that? Do you suggest that people have their own blood pressure cuff at their homes?
Well, I think there's a very important lesson to learn there. First of all, I think once a patient does have an established diagnosis of hypertension, then having a blood pressure cuff at home is going to be a good thing. It's going to be a good thing for two reasons. One, they will be instructed properly in the proper measurement of the blood pressure. All too often, we have people who go to Walmart or one of the other facilities and simply walk up there, put their arm in this machine, and get a reading and go by that reading. They're not constantly calibrated. That's not the way we measure blood pressure to determine if you have disease or not. So I think the most important thing is first to see your physician. After you see your physician or your nurse practitioner in that practice, then I think you can know whether you have hypertension. Once you have the diagnosis, having a cuff at home with proper instruction on its use is very valuable.
Excellent. And on the phone, we have Carol from Tampa. Carol, you are on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with Steve Maskin. You have a question on hypertension for Benny Maniscalco.
Yes, I do. I think the doctor could probably hear clearly in the background that I have a lot of stress. My question is, I have normal blood pressure, but at times I have a lot of stress with my three children, and I show that sometimes if I yell. And is my blood pressure rising at those times, and can that cause me harm later, even though when I go to the doctor my blood pressure is normal?
How old are you, Carol?
I'm 40. And I'm sorry, but I won't be able to hang on. I'll listen on the radio, if that's all right.
All right. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Carol, there's no doubt that stress can be a part of elevating your blood pressure instantaneously under any circumstance. I think we always have to distinguish between an elevation in blood pressure that is a disease and one that is physiologic. For instance, when you are taking care of those three children and running around and having to climb the stairs or wash the clothes or pick them up or care for them, your blood pressure is probably at a higher level or you couldn't perform the function. High blood pressure is when you're sitting for 5 minutes and we measure a pressure greater than 120 over 80 on three consecutive measurements, 5 minutes apart, and it's elevated. And then we try to make a distinction between a one-time observance and a multiple-time observance. So yes, stress can raise your blood pressure. Yes, it can lead to changes in your organs, like your heart and your kidneys, that you're not aware of. And that's why many of the patients with a history of hypertension present with an event as opposed to a symptom they recognize.
And is it true, too, of course, like the caller is in her 40s, but the caller may also have other issues, too, family history. Perhaps they're on hormone replacements or some estrogen supplementation, for example, other issues, maybe overweight, that can also increase that risk for and presenting with an event.
Yes, I think that's true as well, Steve. There are certainly some studies that have pointed out to us that synthetic estrogen replacement can certainly be a part of a problem with hypertension. Certainly, one could be taking what are called steroids to the general public for other disease conditions, which can be detrimental and raise your blood pressure. Some children can be taking Ritalin for ADD, and that can be one that raises your blood pressure. So I think there are multiple both disease states and medications that one could be using for its good effect on other conditions that affect your blood pressure. And that's why it's important to see your healthcare professional, your physician, your nurse practitioner, so you can discuss those items with them.
What would you recommend, for example, in the the middle-aged mother with lots of stress at home caring for young children? It's hard to perhaps check for her to have her blood pressure checked in the middle of one of these episodes where the kids are screaming and so forth. How would you recommend getting at whether or not that woman is having a potential blood pressure issue or problem?
Well, there are two things that can be done. Carol, I think one thing you could do is what you've done already. That is, when you go to your physician and you're in a relaxed mode, hopefully, that the blood pressure will be measured and it will be normal. If it's normal but you're worried that perhaps we're missing something, there are two specific kinds of cardiac tests you can have. One is an exercise stress test. When you get on the treadmill or you do any kind of dynamic exercise, the obligatory response of your blood pressure is that the top number will rise and the bottom number will fall. If you see both numbers going upward, then you have a problem that is most likely due to fixed resistance in your blood vessels, which is hypertension. Another test that can be done besides blood work to make sure that your kidneys and thyroid glands are working normal is to get a echocardiogram. And the ultrasound can tell us whether you have normal muscle thickness and normal muscle function. If you have a thick heart muscle, then you more than likely have blood pressure elevations at many times that you're not aware of.
Okay, well, that's a great idea to consider a stress test. So it would in some way reproduce, although not be identical to, but reproduce what your blood pressure does under stressful conditions.
That's correct.
Okay. Carol, I hope that helps you. Now, let's talk more about treatment. How, generally speaking, we had a caller earlier from Brandon asking about a friend of hers who was treated initially with a diuretic. Bernie, is that Benny, is that the typical first-line treatment these days, or what would you recommend?
Well, when I was a young cardiologist, first-line treatment with diuretics was all we had. So I think that we don't want to say it doesn't have a place in the therapy of hypertension. But I've been fortunate enough to have seen the evolution of enough research, which has now clearly told us what are the two main things we need to treat to control blood pressure. And they are two hormones that are produced in our body. And if we have therapy directed at those hormones, then we probably will be successful in controlling the blood pressure. The point to make, however, is that 75% of the patients who have bona fide hypertension are going to require three or more different drugs taken together in order to accomplish the goal of therapy, which is to get your blood pressure to 120 over 80. In our office, we start with a platform medication, meaning one upon which we can add the second and third, and we get them to maximal doses so that we can then say we have effective therapy.
And what would the platform therapy be, the initial therapy?
Well, there's some discussion and controversy still about that, but I think the system that we refer to that needs to be treated and approached in the uncomplicated hypertensive patient is called the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Very fancy name for the fact that we have a series of hormonal changes in our body that lead to blood vessels squeezing down and raising blood pressure. And the general medications that we use to approach that system are called angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, ACEs. And then the target that the hormone goes to, the receptor site, the angiotensin receptor blocking drug, those are the two that are most commonly used as a platform today to get to the patient with uncomplicated hypertension.
Okay. So you initiate those treatments and then optimize the dosage to achieve the as best a blood best response you can before considering adding additional medication.
Yes, I do. And, of course, I want to quickly add, Steve, the most important thing is to have a significant discussion with your physician or nurse practitioner, as we do in our office, because the patient who's educated will be prepared to understand that one drug is not going to be the solution in 75% of the cases.
Okay. And we will return in a flash and discuss more about what Benny Maniscalco advises his patients with newly diagnosed essential hypertension before they go on therapy. You're listening to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin, back in a flash.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back once again, Steve Maskin, Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling type hypertension with Benny Maniscalco. Benny, before the break, we talked about initiating an individual with newly diagnosed hypertension on the initial therapies. Question about diet. Is diet something that you would work with a patient before initiating therapies? Let's say the patient is borderline hypertensive. Do you try and alter the diet if the diet clearly can be altered or should be altered? Let's say there's a lot of salt intake before you begin medical therapy, or what is your approach on that?
Well, I think if someone has a blood pressure that is 20 millimeters of mercury, over 10 millimeters of mercury, greater than the goal of your therapy, you're probably going to need to initiate pharmacologic therapy. But every single patient who is newly diagnosed with hypertension should have a discussion with their physician and nurse practitioner about dietary intake. For instance, our first caller today asked about sodium. So if you were looking at what our requirements are of daily intake of sodium, it's about a gram. But when you look at the average American consumption, it's about 4 to 6 grams a day. And so if you've got a diet that's heavy in sodium chloride, you really want to start eliminating a heavy salt diet. Eat other salts like potassium salts, magnesium salts, because we think that although we focused on big intakes of sodium, that deficit intakes of potassium and magnesium are probably equally culpable for raising blood pressure. In addition, we need to stay away from saturated fats, and we need to get more fruits and vegetables in us. It's been shown in many, many studies that if you look at all the patients who have risk for stroke or heart attack, 20% of them could be avoided if they were on the proper diet, which means we're cutting down on atherosclerosis and hypertension. So, yes, diet's very important. My last comment so that people can associate with it is if one looks at the surgery that is done for the obese, gastric bypass surgery, these patients are on multitudes of medicine. But once they have surgery and they lose that 100, 200 pounds and their diet changes, their blood pressure is absolutely normal and they're off of medications. So it's, diet is an important factor. The difficulty is convincing patients to do that.
Okay, so it sounds like you'd have the discussion about diet, but if the blood pressure is more, at least 10 millimeters
diastolic,
greater than the goal, then they will be initiated on pharmaceutical therapy in addition to diet alteration.
That's correct.
Okay. And what? Tell me, so in your office, for example, let's say a patient is diagnosed as initial hypertensive patient. What are the guidelines that you give that patient? What do you tell the patient on the first visit when you do make the diagnosis, this person has hypertension, and you discuss diet and medications? What else, other issues you discuss?
I think there, besides diet and the discussion about medications and the need for multiple drugs in three-quarters of the patient, it's important to determine whether there has been any established damage to the heart or the kidneys. So blood screening for kidney function, a thyroid profile if it has not been done to make sure there's not excess thyroid production, which can raise blood pressure, and an echocardiogram is something that we do on a rather routine basis, because we talk about end organ damage, and many people who have hypertension have had it for a long time before they're diagnosed, and they already have existing comorbid events and situations in their heart. So we want to know that ahead of time so that we can monitor that very carefully.
Would you look for other causes of hypertension that you alluded to in the beginning of the show, that although the majority of hypertensives are so-called essential hypertensives, that there are other causes? Would you, at that point in time, would you run an do evaluative tests?
Yes, and most of them, fortunately, can be eliminated by a good history and by a good physical examination. The remainder can be eliminated by drawing some appropriate blood tests, like the thyroid profile and the kidney panel. And then there are a couple of very strange things that are very, very rare, way less than 1%, that I think you could also look for if the patient does not respond to therapy. Then you start looking for comorbid situations.
Okay. And would so-called narrowing of the artery that goes to the kidney, is that in the less than 1% category, or is that more common?
Well, I think it's becoming more common now in terms of our discovery, but I think it's on the basis of atherosclerosis. I think the disease process in which we develop blocked arteries does not hold a kidney artery immune. So when we see people who don't respond to therapy, especially after we've used proper doses of medication, we will often get a picture of those arteries to make sure that they are not narrowed down.
Okay. And people talk about getting cardiac catheterization. Routinely, patients with hypertension would not get that unless they have specific symptoms related to their heart?
That's correct. Cardiac catheterization is not indicated just for the presence of hypertension. If, on the other hand, you have a high level of suspicion that you might have an abnormal anatomy, such as a coarctation of the aorta, then that might be a situation where the hypertensive patient also has a need for heart catheterization. But in general, no.
How about a patient who is hypertensive who is frankly obese?
No. The obese patient, the number one therapy, and of course, as you know, Steve, that's the number one increasing problem in our society and around the world. But the obese patient needs to lose weight. That's the number one therapy. Lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. And even a 10-pound weight loss can result in control of blood pressure or a marked reduction in the need for medication.
How about a patient with hypertension who's obese and lipid profile or screening the blood for fats suggests significant atherosclerosis?
Well, if that is there clinically, then, of course, we would probably be looking at some type of a stress test to determine whether or not there was evidence of obstruction or lack of blood flow due to that hardening of the artery. And then, if so, then a cardiac catheterization would probably be in order.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to take a moment now to thank Benny Maniscalco. It's been, again, an honor to have you here today with us to advise us, to share your expertise on hypertension. I'm Steve Maskin. You're listening to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Next week, we tackle dry eye and what you can do when drops don't work to eliminate the pain and suffering of dry eye. We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
The Focus on Females Healthcare Education programs are for you. Visit our free 4th Annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 21st, 2009, at the Tampa Convention Center. And listen every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic on Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Learn more at www.focusonfemales.com.